Hello and welcome to the Health Hacks Podcast, the podcast for high-performing professional females looking for practical ways to optimize all areas of their health and wellness. At Health Hacks, we understand that as a busy female, you wear numerous hats throughout your working week. You're trying to juggle it all, while also looking to carve out time to prioritize your own goals. It's challenging. It's therefore our mission to channel your energy into the areas that are going to help give you the biggest bang for your buck, to really make significant changes to your lifestyle in the most efficient way possible. So at the moment, if you feel as though you need more energy, you want to feel more productive to improve the quality of your sleep, to lower stress, to increase confidence, to show up better in both your personal and your professional relationships, this podcast is for you. If it's time you prioritize your health, learn to fuel your body, found time for exercise, and said goodbye to fad diets and inconsistent behaviors for good, this podcast is for you. If it's time for you to step into the shoes of the high performer you know you can be, this is the right podcast for you. Join me and my guests as we take you through the Health Hacks Podcast. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Health Hacks Podcast. I hope you're doing wonderfully well and thanks for joining me, giving me your time and attention this week. We have a big recording coming up with Dr. Lindsay Browning and she's talking to us about one of the big pillars of health. We haven't done a recording on sleep in a while, so I'm really looking forward to bringing this episode to you. And there were two new things I learned from this recording with Dr. Browning. The first one, sleep tourism. Have you heard of it? I certainly hadn't. And the second, revenge sleep procrastination. I can almost guarantee that you've done it in at least maybe the last week, the last fortnight. Revenge sleep procrastination. We're going to find out on this episode what it is and how it's affecting our overall sleep quality. Okay, if you are joining us for the first time on Health Hacks, huge warm welcome. If you are a regular listener, welcome back. If you've taken any value at all from any episode of Health Hacks that you have ever listened to, one golden nugget of information, one tiny little tip, one tiny little trick, if you found any value in what we do, it would mean the absolute world if you could show your support to the show. There are two ways to do that, super easy. You're probably listening to me on Apple, Spotify, or podcasts. If you simply scroll down on your podcast platform of choice and hit the follow or the subscribe button, not only will our subscription grow as it does, we can bring you more incredible voices and information from experts all across the world. But it will also mean that you never need to search for an episode of Health Hacks again. We will magically appear in your podcast inbox every single Tuesday. So win-win. Or if you feel you would like to do so, perhaps you've had a conversation with someone recently about sleep. Maybe you met a friend for coffee and they said, for whatever reason, that they're really, really struggling with their sleep at the moment. That coffee was an absolute lifesaver, that caffeine kick. Perhaps this is the episode that you could send to them and say, hey, I listen to this every week. I find it really, really useful. You might too. Send Health Hacks to a friend. Let's spread our message. Let's spread our voice far and wide. We're now streaming in 26 different countries. How incredible is that? And I thank you as ever for your support for the show. If you're interested in one-to-one coaching, if the work that we do resonates with you and you're interested in finding out more about working with me personally, get in touch. I'd love to hear from you. We do work with women all across the world to make changes to both their body and mind. I'm a menopause support coach, specialized in helping busy women find time to carve out space and energy for their overall health and well-being. It's what we do. So if you've been listening for a while and you really resonate with our message, but now it's time for you to action. Maybe now the season has changed, the summer months are approaching, maybe you've booked a summer holiday, maybe you are thinking about the events that are coming up over the next couple of months and you want to feel your very best possible self. Get in touch, we'd love to hear from you. The next step would be to jump on a really informal call with me. It's only 50 minutes long, but the real purpose of that call is to find out if we'd be a great fit, for me to find out what's going on with you at the moment, but even more importantly, where you want to be in the coming months. This is where we can step in to find out if we might be the right fit to help you get there. So I'd love to hear from you. But without further ado, this week, let's jump into this recording with Dr. Lindsay Browning, all about our favorite subject, sleep. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Health Hacks podcast. I'm absolutely thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Lindsay Browning. Dr. Browning is a chartered psychologist, a neuroscientist, and author. She holds a doctorate in insomnia from the University of Oxford. Her book, Navigating Sleeplessness, How to Sleep Deeper and Better for Longer, offers actionable strategies and step-by-step solutions to help us develop better sleep using self-care and self-compassion. And she joins us here today. Lindsay, this is one of my favourite topics. So I'm really, really looking forward to going into this with you. Firstly, how are you?
Super, thank you. Really enjoying the change of seasons. Hopefully the sun will start to come out and it'll be a beautiful summer after a long winter.
I'm going to put my hands up and say it. I have a heated blanket under this table as we sit here recording this podcast. We do feel like we're going into another winter. And it's funny you mentioned the seasons. The link between sleep and seasons is something that we're going to touch on today. But before we do so, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about you and how you got into the world of sleep.
Yeah, sure. I did a degree in psychology. And then I did a master's in neuroscience. And then for my doctorate, I started to specifically study sleep. And as part of that, the focus was really on insomnia and people who have difficulty with their sleep. And although I've never personally really struggled with my sleep, I didn't get into this field because I actually, really struggled and I had insomnia. I was always really interested in sleep and dreams and all that kind of thing. But through studying it, I was exposed to, meeting people who really, really just couldn't fall asleep and whose lives were being really affected by it, and learned lots of strategies about how to improve sleep. So that when I graduated in 2006, I decided I wanted to set up a company just specifically helping people with their sleep. And so since then, I've been working in the sleep field and I've been working with individuals to help them improve their sleep, but also doing an awful lot of sort of corporate webinars, well-being sessions, as well as just doing anything really to do with sleep, lots of shift work stuff, and sleep tourism, which is a sort of emerging field, which is really, really exciting as well.
You've just opened my eyes to this new concept of sleep tourism, which I would like to touch on. Lindsay, this is a huge subject, but I'm going to ask you first and foremost, why are we struggling with sleep so much in 2024? What are some of the common things that you see?
Yeah, it's very much a lifestyle issue, because when we are stressed, the crux of it is when we're stressed or anxious, if there's something going wrong, we're fearful, we're worried, then our body physiologically responds to that stress. We get a sort of fight or flight mechanism, our heart beats a bit faster, our breathing's a bit fast and shallow, our mind is racing, our body's got adrenaline, cortisol, because we are stressed. And of course, when we are stressed and anxious, our body is almost deliberately keeping us awake so that we can deal with the stress. Because everything I do sleep-wise, I take it back to biology, when we were cavemen. Where is this coming from that gave us an edge evolutionarily? And if we're stressed or anxious or there's something wrong, then we need to deal with it. We can't just go to sleep. And modern society nowadays, we have a lot of stress. We pile stress upon stress. Not only do we have two working parents, we have financial worries, we've got the state of the world, we're worrying about the global climate crisis. There's just worry on top of worry. And people trying to fill every second of their day with being productive and useful, that there's no space to relax. And then, of course, as naturally our brains are racing at night and we can struggle to sleep. And I think that stress and anxiety of modern life is really at the key of everything.
And I'll ask the question then, and I'm sure, we're not here to scaremonger anyone. Mm-hmm. And we're here to be realistic and to flag up what's actually going on. Lindsay, can you talk us through some of the health consequences if you mentioned you dealt with a lot of people that dealt with insomnia. What are some of the health consequences to long-term issues around sleep?
Yeah, so back to when I first graduated back in 2006, sleep at that time even though it was being studied, but it was still seen in the main, main media, everyone, as a bit of an inconvenience. Sleep is a waste of time. We should sleep as little as possible. Lots of people saying, how little can we get away with? Because the less time we spend asleep, the more time we can spend doing useful things. People would gloat about how little sleep they had. But of course, as time's gone by, science has proven how beneficial sleep is. It is not a waste of time. It's not just when we just, our brain switches off and we just turn off for a little while for no good reason. It's not like when we turn our computer off or turn the TV off and go to bed. Our brain is going through a whole host of processes. It's not turned off, it's busy. And during sleep is when our brain physically repairs. We consolidate memories, we regulate hormones in our body. It's so busy. And if we don't get enough sleep, and the recommendations are for a working age adult, so someone 18 to 64, is somewhere between 7 to 9 hours is the amount of sleep that we really need to be optimally healthy. And if we don't regularly get that, then we have an increased risk of diabetes, obesity, heart attacks, certain types of cancers, dementia, as well as it can affect our immunity and our mood. People who don't get enough sleep tend to be more depressed and more anxious. So getting enough sleep is your superfood. It's your superpower. It is absolutely going to make you healthier and happier. And at the end of the day, mean that you're more able to get things done during the day because you're not as sluggish, you're not sick. Sleep is not a waste of time. It is absolutely vital.
Lindsay, what would you say to individuals, and I have certain clients in mind, who will say to me things like, Caroline, I'm fine on 5.5, 6 hours sleep. What would you say to someone who gauges the amount of sleep that they feel that they require as lower than your recommended 7 to 9 hours?
So the 7 to 9 is a continuum, and picking an arbitrary number and saying everyone needs that isn't helpful. That's like saying that we should all be 5 foot 10. I mean, we're all different heights, we're all different skin tones, we all have different sleep needs. Now, science suggests that 7 to 9 is like the perfect window, but that really it's more like maybe 6 to 10, give or take. If you're getting significantly less than six or needing significantly more than 10, then it's probably unlikely that's healthy, and there may be a problem there. And plenty of people get by on 5, maybe less hours sleep, and they're fine, and they think, I can cope, I'm fine. But the reality is, yes, you're coping, you're okay, but you're not thriving. And that's where the cumulative impact of not getting enough sleep can really have a long-term effect on your risk of developing dementia when you get a bit older. It's a bit like junk food. We can all survive on junk food for sure. I mean, if we just ate takeaways every meal, we'd be fine, we'd be okay, but we know we wouldn't be healthy. We wouldn't be our prime. We wouldn't have the energy. We wouldn't be great. And getting enough sleep is like choosing to eat a variety of healthy meals. It's, a bit annoying. I'd rather get away with 5 hours sleep. That'd be great. I mean, I'm a busy working parent. I'm really busy. But the reality is, for me to thrive and do the best for myself, I need to get more sleep than that, even though I can survive on less. And that takes me into another point in that at different seasons in our life, we can't necessarily get enough sleep. So 7 to 9 hours that I know personally for me to be the best me, I need near a 9 hour sleep a night. And that's annoying. That really is. I'd be better if I was seven because, like I said, I'm really busy. But there are certain times when that's not attainable because like I said, I'm a busy working parent. I've got clients, I've got responsibilities. I simply don't have enough time to do that. So it's about understanding that, when you're a new mum and you've got young kids, or you're in that sandwich generation, you're looking after your elderly parents whilst also your kids, or you've got a really busy work time, you may not be able to get the recommendations. In the same way that if we're really busy and stressed, we may not be eating the right kind of foods that we know we should. We might not be exercising, even though we know we should. And it's not about obsessing about it. Yes, sleep's really important, but we can all survive and be okay on less sleep than we need in the short term, because if we didn't, then every new parent on the planet would have cancer and diabetes and dementia, because every new parent on the planet has a period of probably a couple of years per child of not getting enough sleep. So don't worry about it. I want people to just think, yeah, if I can improve my sleep, maybe I can improve my health benefits, rather than listening to this and going, oh no, I don't get the right amount. This is terrible. Just, like food. If you're not eating brilliantly, then how about you could, add a bit of fruit and veg into your diet? Or if you're not exercising, then maybe, walk to the shops instead of taking the car. Those small changes. If you're not getting enough sleep, maybe try and go to bed a little bit earlier just to improve your sleep.
I love that. I love the correlation and the correlation between diet and sleep. I hadn't actually thought about it that way before. You mentioned their children. You also mentioned busy work schedules. What are some of the other barriers preventing particularly busy working women getting consistently enough sleep? What are some of the things that are getting in the way?
So something post-COVID that's become quite common is it's been given the name sleep procrastination, revenge sleep procrastination, which sounds really weird. But basically, it's that if we're really busy through the day and we have commitments, we've got social life, we've got our job, we've got our partner, we've got all sorts of things we're doing, our time isn't our own. And then when we lie down in bed, all those responsibilities and things we had to do are done, or at least postponed till the morning. And we grab our phone and we start scrolling and we start looking, oh, I'll just check on, TikTok or Instagram or whatever it is, just to give me some me time. And of course, that can turn into an hour or two. And we could have m planned to go to bed at 10 to give us our recommended amount of sleep, but it's 11:30 midnight before we actually put that phone down and go to sleep, because we felt like we needed that me time. And lots of people sacrifice sleep because they just want some time to themselves. That's a really common thing. Or you could be just staying up late because you've got project deadlines and you're just trying to maximize every second. Or you've there's a popular thing about the 5 a.m. club thing, but getting up at 5 in the morning to be really productive. And yeah, that sounds great. Get up at 5, you get things done before the day starts. Amazing. That's only going to work if you go to bed at 9. Because if you get up at 5, then what time do you realistically have to go to bed in order to get 7 to 9 hours sleep? So I'm a real advocate of don't sacrifice sleep to go to the gym. Going to the gym is really important, but we need to do both. It's not about, exchanging one for the other, because then you're going to get healthier because you're going to the gym, but you're going to get less healthy because you've sacrificed sleep to do that.
Is it technology that's getting in the way of our evenings? You mentioned the scrolling, and I certainly, I'm sure everyone can relate to this. I can certainly relate to that rabbit hole of phone time in the evening. Actually, I have a wonderful app now that turns my phone apps off at a certain time, which I think is absolutely fantastic. But we've all done it. We've all sat there and scrolled because we're decompressing. Really, it's a form of decompression. Is it technology, though, Lindsay, that's getting in the way of that sleep?
A lot of it, yes. And it's not just the scrolling. You could call it doom scrolling, or just, that infinite scrolling. And the reality is, those apps, Twitter, Instagram, all those things, they are infinite. They keep going. They don't have an end. You don't scroll through and you get to the bottom and go, oh, look, I've finished Instagram. I'll go to sleep now, because there's literally no end to it. And they are designed to be addictive. They're designed to give you that short dopamine release. Every time you scroll through, oh, this is an exciting, oh, this is a good. It's giving you that short-term hit. It's addictive. And then you don't think, I'll put the phone down. Or we watch Netflix, we watch, TV. They're binge watching of series. So you watch one episode, oh, that's really exciting. The next one's starting in 15 seconds. Oh, I should go to bed, but oh, I started now. Oh, I'll watch that. So, they're really clever how they've been designed to keep you on them. But of course, it doesn't give you that realistic stop. Oh, it's probably bedtime now, which of course we did have before phones, before binge watching. When that episode was on the TV, on terrestrial TV back in the day, because I'm old enough to remember that. That was the end. You had to wait till next week. So people went to bed. Or you wake up in the middle of the night, and you, oh, I'm not going back to sleep again very easily. Oh, I'll just grab my phone. And again, you're back in that wormhole again. And not only is it that addictiveness, but it's also the light. So when you've got those screens, it's like shining a torch into your face. And when we see lots of bright light, it's biologically telling our body that it's daytime. Because, of course, when we were cavemen, when there's lots of bright light because the sun's up, then, oh, look, lots of bright light. It must be the middle of the day. We need to be really awake. And now, oh, look, the sun's gone down. There's no light. It must be nighttime. Let's produce melatonin and go to sleep. And that's how biologically we are sort of, that's how we work. But of course, we don't have the sun as our only light source. We have all these, you know, we have indoor lighting, we have electricity. We have our own personal sun in our hand that we look at in bed. So our body might have been trying to produce melatonin half an hour ago when we were, you know, tidying up in the kitchen and about to go to bed. And then when we get into bed and put our phone 1 foot away from our face, we're streaming bright light in our face. Say, and our body's going, oh no, silly us, we shouldn't be going to sleep. Clearly, it's still the middle of the day. Look at all this bright light. We should stop producing melatonin and we should wake up. So it's psychologically making us not want to go to sleep because it's addictive. And it's also physically, physiologically keeping you awake because of that bright light. So, yeah, technology is a massive problem with sleep.
And what would you say to ladies who, you know, acknowledge everything that you've just said, and they can, you know, it's almost as if you're speaking directly to them, you're seeing into their evening, and they say, you know, Lindsay, I would love to, I want to decompress in the evening. I do. What else can I do aside from go down the rabbit hole of the phone? What are the things that would allow me to get the best of both worlds, relax after a long working day, and aid my sleep?
The same as all aspects of our life. Easy is always what we go to. You know, we know we feel better if we've had a home cooked healthy meal, but a pack of chocolate biscuits or a takeaway on Deliveroo is a lot easier. So again, it's about thinking, what do I really want from my life? Stopping and making that intentional decision. Because I challenge anyone listening to this, have you ever woken up the next day and thought, oh, I'm so glad I scrolled through TikTok for an hour and a half before bed. No, of course, no one's ever in the history of the world said that. And yet that's what we do. So it's about talk, you know, having a little chat with yourself and thinking, okay, what are my priorities? What do I really want to achieve? What makes me happy? And I'm pretty sure scrolling through social media isn't going to be on that list. So it's about making those intentional decisions. And maybe, like you said, getting a kind of app that monitors your screen time activity, that turns itself off. Give yourself things to do. If you've got maybe you've got a family. I mean, how many pictures have you seen of, like, you know, the parents and the kids, everyone just sitting on the sofa on their phones and the TV's on? Like, no one's actually communicating. So it's not just a sleep issue, it's very much a life issue. So, you know, be intentional about your time. Maybe even think you'll track your well, how you spend your time for a week and see what's really happening, because that can be really, really helpful. And if you do that, it can be really shocking of how you're actually spending your time. When we write down a list of how we'd like to spend our time, but then we look at how we're actually spending our time. So if you spend your time in a really a choice that you chose to spend it, you're probably going to be doing activities that would be much, much better for your sleep, like physical activity. If we do more physical activity during the day, we're going to sleep better because more physical activity helps us to fall asleep a bit faster and sleep a little bit more soundly. If you do activities in the evening that are more intentional, it might be reading a book that you want to read, or it might be journaling, or it might be painting a picture, or talking to your family, playing a board game. And all of those things are going to be way more conducive to sleep than scrolling through social media. And also, if people do scroll through social media and they're, you know, really busy, and this is the number one reason that I find people tell me they can't sleep, is because they have a busy mind. When they do switch the lights off, their mind's worrying. And that is almost 100% caused by the fact that you didn't stop and let yourself think at any other time during the day.
Let's go into that, because this anxiety around sleep, or I think you will know this inside and out, but what I often experience from my anecdotally from my ladies is they'll be worried about something and they'll try and get to sleep, and suddenly that worry comes to the forefront of their mind. And as you describe, the mind starts to go at 100 miles an hour. They'll have a poor night's sleep, and then they'll be anxious about getting a good sleep the next night, and so the cycle continues. So I think anxiety is a big one. Lindsay, how do you help clients navigate that, the anxiety around sleep?
So the reality is that your that anxiety, either about sleep itself or just about your mind just thinking about all the stuff you didn't do very well today or the stuff you've got to do tomorrow, that mind just going 100 million miles an hour is so common. And the reality is we've got to give ourselves space early in the day to think. Otherwise, your mind's going to do it for you. You know, if we get up in the morning and we make breakfast and we switch the computer on and we're doing our work and we're having meetings and we go to the gym and we make dinner and we see our friends and then we scroll through social media and watching some Netflix and then we go to bed. It's literally when you turn that light off and you turn the put the phone down, it's literally the first time your brain has had the entire day to think. And of course it's going to go, we really should think about how we spoke to so and so earlier. And oh, I haven't finished that presentation for the meeting tomorrow. I hope that goes well. And if it doesn't, then blah, 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 blah. Your mind's just going a million miles an hour. So lots of people at that point think, well, I'll listen to a podcast to replace that, or I'll listen to a sleep story, or I'll put some music on, or I'll do a, you know, an activity like I'll count sheep in my mind, or I'll think about something else. And all of those things, yes, they can help to displace the thoughts, but the reality is we need to fix the problem in the first place. There's only so much sort of displacing that thinking that we can do. Actually, we need to understand why it's happening and deal with that. And this is so key. So, you know, I tell my clients, I just want you to find 15 minutes early in the day, just 15 minutes, and dedicate that to worry or to thinking or to your to-do list or to brain dumping, whatever it is that you find is going through your mind in the middle of the night. Do that for 15 minutes earlier in the day. And if you start doing that and it becomes part of your regular routine, then your brain won't be thinking that it has to do all that thinking at, you know, when you lie down to go to sleep or when you wake up at 3, 4 in the morning, because it knows that you've done it earlier, or at least you are giving yourself the opportunity to do it earlier in the day. And as busy as we all are, we can find, if we're really honest with ourselves, we can find 15 minutes at some point. And that just that one technique is so effective for sleep, for emptying that busy mind, for dealing with those anxieties early in the day. But also it's massively effective for depression and anxiety. It's not just a sleep tool. It's used a lot if people are feeling really low or they're feeling really anxious. It gives your brain a contained space of time to allow yourself to worry, and then you're done. Otherwise, that worry and anxiety can become paralyzing and just turn into the entire day.
And so you're the second person in a week who has mentioned to me about scheduling time for worrying.
It's
And
so important.
initially, when I first heard this concept, I thought, you know, are we really, is this something that we have to be doing now? But actually, it's scheduling time for a little bit of quiet, isn't it, in the chaos of what is very often our life. Should we be doing this at a regular time every single day, or is it about weaving it in where we can?
I think if you have a regular time, it can be really helpful, because let's say that you're in a place in your life when maybe you're concerned about your marriage, or you're wondering if you should move house, or wondering if you should change jobs. Those kind of really big decisions can start to take over your every minute of your day, because that's all you can think about. So having a time that you dedicate to think about that is really helpful, because when it's not that time, oh no, I think about, yeah, my worry time is 6 p.m. I don't need to think about it now. I'm going to think about it then. Whereas if you change it, then you might start just thinking about it whenever. So having a dedicated time is really helpful to do that. Of course, maybe it can't be the same time every day, but having a dedicated time It really is life changing, and I've this technique I've been using for almost 20 years with my clients, and it really is incredibly effective. But you do have to have you have to do it. It's only 15 minutes, and when you do it, you can we can all see those lovely fancy journals in bookshops, and you can use one of those to do it, or you can just get a piece of paper and a pen, and that's free. Or you can just write it on notes on your device if you are modern and not an old person like me who is remembers how we used to write with pens. So however you do it, just make it work for you.
Got to weave into your life, doesn't it? I like to do it on notes on my phone when I'm on the dog walk.
Because you're
There's
young.
a little, and it's just trying to get the best of both worlds. Because I think you're right. We can often plug ourselves in, get the AirPods in, and be listening to 101 different podcasts and people talking about productivity and all these things that we should be doing. And we're really cramming a lot of thinking into the day. Lindsay, going back to something you just mentioned about, because I've definitely seen a rise of apps between things like Calm and Sleep Stories and people using audiobooks really and stories to go to sleep. What's your personal view on this?
So I'd say if you're having a short-term sleep blip, so maybe something's gone wrong at work, or you're having a particularly difficult time with one of your friends, then yes, your sleep's going to be a bit disrupted because you're stressed. And whenever we are stressed or anxious, our sleep's a bit disrupted. In which case, things like sleep meditations, your guided meditations that talk you through, or sleep stories, or those kinds of things, can be quite helpful in the short term to get you through that blip. But if your sleeping issue isn't just a one, a short-term thing, if it's been going on for months, for years, and I see people who've, struggled to sleep for 40 plus years, then those kinds of apps and things actually can start to not be so helpful because you have to, oh, I'm struggling to sleep. Oh, I better get my phone. You have to reach for your phone. You have to get the headphones, and then you're listening. And then, of course, we sleep better when there's dark and silence. So if you're adding in noise in your headphones, actually, that can be disruptive. So there is definitely a time and place for those, but if you are looking for, what are the recommended solutions for insomnia, listening to audio books, sleep stories, isn't even on that list because it's not a recommended solution. Doesn't mean to say it can't be helpful in the short term, but it's not really the first line intervention. Like, no one ever comes to see me and they're struggling with their sleep, and I say, ah, well, what you need is to listen to a sleep story, because that's not really the best thing to do. But like I said, if you find it helpful and you just need to get through a week or two of a bit of iffy sleep, then go for it. If it's not broken, don't fix it. That's fine.
There is one. There's a Jamie Dornan one that I've listened to that is incredibly soothing. If anyone wants to, some voices are just lovely to listen to before you fall asleep. Lindsay, one thing I did want to ask you about and to pick your brain and your expertise on this. We talk a lot on the podcast about menopause and supporting ladies through what can often be a really challenging number of years in a lot of cases. And I know for a lot of ladies, vasomotor symptoms in the form of hot flashes and night sweats are a big component of what they experience during their menopausal journey. And obviously, this has a big impact on sleep duration, sleep quality. I wonder if you've got any advice specifically for ladies at this time of life around menopause and sleep.
So menopause is a time when women's sleep is often massively triggered and becomes worse. So women, we're so lucky. We have a higher incidence of sleeping disorders or sleeping problems compared to men anyway. And this is massively increased when we go through menopause. Now, the reason that women tend to have worse sleep or more sleeping issues than men is mostly probably to do with our hormonal changes. So every month we go through hormonal changes when we have our period. So there's often a monthly problem with sleep. I see lots of people who their sleep's fine except for, just before or during their period or just after. And then, of course, if we get pregnant, our hormones go all over the place, and we can have sleeping difficulties when we're pregnant, not only because the hormonal surges, but the physical, baby press on your stomach and kicking you in the middle of the night and bouncing on your bladder. And then when we stop having the baby, as in the baby is born, we have a huge like change in our hormones yet again, causing sleeping problems. And then we've got a baby to deal with. So again, pregnancy can be a time when sleep is really badly triggered, but menopause is by far the greatest issue. And that's because not only is there the hormonal issues that happen, and estrogen, progesterone, they're all important with regarding sleep, but it's also the physical symptoms like the night sweats, the hot flashes, the anxiety surges that we get through menopause. And the trouble is, if you wake up and you have that huge anxiety surge, just woken up and you're just like, oh my goodness, you're completely panicked. And there's no real reason for it, but your body is physiologically panicked. You have that adrenaline anxiety surge. Of course, we're not going to be able to go back straight back to sleep again. And if you wake up and you're covered in sweat, well, of course, you can't go back to sleep again straight away because you're physically covered in sweat and you have to go and change your bed covers potentially and, change your nightie. So sleep is really physically affected during the menopause. But then we get the knock-on effect after that, which is the anxiety about sleep, because maybe someone's, read my book about how important sleep is, and they're like, oh no, now I'm going through the menopause, my sleep's really disrupted and disturbed, and I don't want to have all these negative health implications. I need to improve my sleep. And now we're anxious about sleep, or we wake up covered in sweat, I'm like, oh no, I need to go back to sleep again quickly, or else it's only going to be 3 hours till the morning and I won't get enough sleep. We're making ourselves even more stressed and anxious. And the more stressed and anxious we are, even about sleep itself, then we can't sleep. So, other than magically curing menopausal symptoms, and therefore, I say magically, sometimes HRT is a really good solution, because if you can take away those physical problems, like take away the night sweats and the adrenaline surges and balance out those hormones, then your sleep can be a lot better. But sometimes people, they can still struggle with their sleep because now maybe those physical symptoms have finished, or maybe they've gone through the menopause and now they're at the other side, but they're still worrying about their sleep. They're still really concerned, and that is causing the problem itself. So what I want to say to people is, you might not know this, but we sleep in sleep cycles, which are approximately an hour and a half-ish. But please don't break up your night into hour and a half chunks. It's not helpful. But approximately every hour and a half, we'll go through a sleep cycle, which is kind of like a phase of sleep. And then we'll go through another one, and then we'll go through another one. And between each sleep cycle, everybody wakes up. Like we always have done, and we always will. But lots of people don't know this, and you won't know it because if you only wake up for less than a couple of minutes, you simply won't remember the next morning that you woke up. So when we were 18, 21, we go to sleep at 10:30, wake up at 7, and we don't remember waking up. So we think, oh, fantastic, I slept through the night, one solid block of sleep. But then we go through the menopause. And we are woken up in the night, maybe because of adrenaline surges, maybe because of night sweats, maybe we just wake up. And we might think, oh no, this is terrible. My sleep is now fragmented. It's broken sleep because I need to sleep in one solid block like I did when I was younger. And now I'm going through the menopause. Now I'm older. It's terrible. I've got broken sleep. I need to sleep in one block. And that's really unhelpful because A, there's no such thing as a solid block of sleep. I mean, that there literally isn't. That's kind of called being dead. Like we all sleep in these sleep cycles, and we always wake up in between each one. But if you wake up and you look at the clock and you become aware that you've woken up and you think, oh no, how terrible, my sleep's now broken, of course you're not going to go back to sleep again very easily because now you're so stressed about your sleep. So it's really important to not be so worried and anxious about waking up in the night, because everyone does that, and that's not anything to worry about. As long as you can go back to sleep again relatively quickly, your sleep's fine. It's okay. I mean, there's a difference between waking up once or twice versus waking up multiple times. Because if you're aware that you wake up lots of times in the night, that's a sign there might be something else going on there. But waking up once to go to the loo, that's not a problem at all, except if you think it was a problem. And if you think it's a problem because you're used to sleep soundly, then you're going to give yourself a sleeping problem because you're so worried about sleep that you've now made your sleep go wrong. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Lindsay, do you recommend people sleep without the clock with the
Yeah,
face on it? Yeah.
absolutely. Because the thing is, yeah, number one thing is just don't have a clock you can see from the bed. It can only bring problems because you're lying there. And let's say you're having trouble falling asleep at the start of the night. So you go to bed, the clock says 11 o'clock. You lie there for a bit, you look at the clock, it says midnight. You lie there for a bit, and you look at the clock, says 1:30. You think, oh no, I've been lying here for 2.5 hours. You might have been asleep for ages in between, but just not realize it. And the fact that you keep looking at the clock, you presume you haven't slept. So it just makes you more anxious. Or when you wake up at whatever time in the middle of the night and you look at the clock, you just immediately start doing mental calculations of how long you have slept for or how little sleep you're going to get. And if you fall asleep right now, then how long is that until morning? Oh, it's only that amount of time. And oh, I've got that meeting at whatever time. It just is causing you stress and anxiety and making you wake up even more. So, yeah, absolutely. Do not have a clock that you can see. Have an alarm clock. And this is really important because lots of people who go through the menopause say, well, I don't need to set an alarm because I always wake up before it. And I say to them, well, yeah, of course, because you have to wake up to check to see if it's morning yet. If you had an alarm, then you, if you, if and when you wake up in the night, your brain goes, has the alarm gone off? No. Okay, it's not morning. I'll go back to sleep again. Whereas if you haven't got an alarm set, then when you wake up, your brain goes, oh, we need to check if it's morning yet. And you're making yourself wake up even more. So, yeah, absolutely. Please don't have a clock that you can see. Just, turn it around. If you use your phone as the clock, then, turn it face down. Or if you're too tempted, then just put it out of arm's reach. But make sure you have an alarm clock to wake you up in the morning.
Do you have a particular type of alarm clock that you recommend people use?
Well, I personally use a very famous fruit-based phone. That's my alarm clock.
Yep.
But not really. I mean, the reality is, it's not nice to be woken up with a really sharp, angry noise. And lots of alarm clocks, they go from zero to really loud in a really kind of, and that can be quite shocking to wake you up from that. So with an Apple phone, for example, an iPhone, there is a default sort of like alarm clock sound that's very gradual and nice, and it'll wake you up slowly. It starts quietly and then gets increasing volume, and that's a nice way to be woken up. However, if you're someone who really struggles to wake up in the morning, especially teenagers, because teenagers or people who are particularly night owls can really struggle to wake up, and they'll say, well, my alarm clock goes off, but I sleep through it because I'm just, or I turn it off without realizing it, then you can get alarm clocks that have light involved, like Lumia alarm clocks. And what they do is they're like an SAD lamp, which is seasonal affective disorder, and that's the winter blues. And the winter, we in the UK, we tend to be more sad in the winter because there's not as much sunshine. So you can buy these lamps, SAD lamps, which are like basically like a sun in your lounge. They're really, really bright that you turn on and you don't stare at them, but they give you increased light levels, which can help your mood and can help your sleep. So a Lumi alarm clock, I don't have shares in this company or anything, but it's designed so that it's an SAD lamp and alarm clock. So if you set the alarm for 7 a.m., say, then at 7:15, this light will start brightening, and it will start quite dim, and then it'll get brighter and brighter and brighter, so that at 7 o'clock, there's a really, really bright light on. Now, if you're sleeping without an eye mask, your eyelids will be able to tell it's getting lighter because we can, even through our sleep, we can be aware of light levels. So that increasing light just before your alarm clock is encouraging your body to wake up a little bit so that when the alarm clock goes off at 7, you're already a little bit towards that awakening time. Now, like I said, teenagers, this can be really, really helpful, or people who really struggle to wake up in the morning. But for us mere mortals who don't have £150 to spend on one of these clocks, then a normal alarm clock is fine. But if you really struggle in the morning, or you have money to burn, then by all means get one of these clocks because they are great. It's just I don't recommend them blanketly just because they are quite expensive.
They are. I actually have one, and I have an Amazon alternative, which I have to
Oh.
say has been such a game changer. It
Excellent.
really has. I used to find I responded really badly, Lindsay, to the iPhone noise, and
Oh.
not the one you're describing. You know the
Yes, a
other.
new one. The new one's like started being.
Oh, it's this the well the original, the OG like siren, and I honestly used to feel like I was starting my day on a knife edge, which was
Absolutely.
the reason that I got the one that we have. And I really do. It's a lovely, lovely, as long as you are in a very, very sound sleeper, I find it such a lovely way to start the day. It even does this mimic of bird song, which is if you're
Nice.
into it, it works really, really well. You alluded to this, and I want to go into just a little bit deeper about this the change of sleep throughout the seasons, because particularly in the UK, and I really do feel, when is summer coming? We spoke about it at the start of but when is it going to be coming? I feel in the evenings, it's much lighter, but we're still in the mornings. It seems to take a long time in the UK for us to feel the benefits. How does our sleep change over the seasons, and what are the effects of that?
So the reality is, we actually do tend to sleep more in the winter than in the summer. So if you remember, earlier we talked about light affecting our sleep and how our electronic devices used at night can actually disrupt sleep because they're giving us bright light. Well, of course, in the UK at least, in the summer, we have much longer days and we have much less darkness. And in the winter, we have much more darkness and shorter days. So therefore, in the summer, we are getting all this bright light for longer, which is suppressing our melatonin production and making us produce melatonin maybe a little bit later in the day once the sun's gone down, which means that we might be awake for longer in the summer. And also, we might feel a bit more energized and lively during the day in the summer because, especially if it's a nice day and we're outside, there's lots of bright light. Whereas in the winter, we have less hours, but also the sun itself isn't as strong. So, again, even in the winter, we can find ourselves being a bit sluggish and not feeling as awake during the day because that sun isn't as bright. And then at night, we might be producing melatonin a bit earlier because the sun's gone down, and therefore we might want to sleep for a bit longer. So there is definitely a seasonal difference in sleep. But in the UK, we kind of can't we can't really go with that because our jobs and all our responsibilities don't change seasonally. So we have to kind of fight it. And that's why it's so important, especially in the winter, to try and actively, intentionally get more sunshine exposure when you can, which is very difficult if when you're going to work, the sun's not up yet. And when you come home, the sun's already gone down. So that's where SAD lamps can be helpful. You might need, it's probably worth speaking to your doctor before you buy one because not everyone can use an SAD lamp. So certain things, such as like bipolar disorder, certain conditions mean that you shouldn't use one. So I'd check with your GP, but for most people, they can use them and they can be really helpful to give you that boost of bright light during the day, which will help you feel more awake during the day and conversely help you sleep better at night as well.
Yeah, I think it definitely, there's anecdotally, we hear a lot of clients struggling with lower mood and motivation over the winter months, which is definitely a definitely consideration. I'm going to have to just take a second to ask you about sleep tourism, because you introduced me to this term and I'm so intrigued by this concept of sleep tourism. Tell me more.
So over the last sort of 5, 10 years, sleep has really become a buzz thing. I mean, sleep's in every newspaper, magazine. You put the TV on and someone's talking about sleep, which is, as a sleep expert, I think it's fantastic. I'm so happy that people are interested in sleep at last. And this has sort of had a knock-on effect with regards tourism, because 10, 15 years ago, going on a nice holiday, you might expect there to be a yoga instructor, or you might go and there might be a offering a cuisine, like a cooking class. You've gone to Italy and there's like a, oh, let's learn how to make pasta or pizza sort of thing. And now there's an interest in sleep, which is really amazing. So the point is, when we go on holiday, most of us, especially if we go somewhere nice and sunny, there's lots of bright light, and we're really relaxed because we're not in our jobs, we're not stressed. So we sleep better when there's bright light during the day, and we sleep better when we are calm and relaxed. And we also sleep better when we've done exercise and maybe we've been swimming in the sea or in the pool. So people tend to sleep better on holiday. But sleep tourism is where either you'll have an actual holiday that's dedicated to sleep, to improving sleep, or it's part of the holiday you're on, like a yoga session on in your resort. So I was in the Maldives for a luxury like 5-star hotel as their resident sleep expert for a month, which, to be fair, it was not a hard job to say yes to. It was amazing. So I was there for a month and I was offering like one-to-one sessions and running relaxation classes on the beach so that people who are on holiday could learn some techniques to help them sleep better when they come home. And I did some sort of jet lag sessions because people who can afford to go to a luxury 5-star hotel in the Maldives are probably quite high-flying business people, maybe, who travel a lot, and therefore giving them some advice of how best to manage jet lag was really helpful to them. So they've gone on holiday to have a relax, but also to learn something. So yeah, that's what sleep tourism is, and it's a burgeoning sort of field. And yeah, I'm doing sort of a few things along in those lines, which is great.
Because it does, it happens when you go away, you do find, I've never thought about it consciously, as I mentioned to you, but as a byproduct of going away, we often find that our sleep is so much better when we're on holiday. And I suppose it's about being able to package up some of those concepts and put them in our suitcase and bring them home with us, isn't it, when we come back after our break. Lindsay, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. And as ever on the show, it's really, really important when we're putting together all of this information that we don't just educate, but that we give away tangible tools and strategies that our ladies can use and actually start applying so that they can make use of the podcast and start to action straight away. If you had to summarize some top sleep tips or your top sleep non-negotiables for individuals looking to improve their sleep overnight, excuse the pun, what are some of the strategies that you would suggest people start with?
Sure. The first one I would say, and it's not going to be the most fun one to hear, but regularity. So trying to go to bed at a fairly consistent time and getting up every morning 7 days per week at a re fairly regular time is one way of really improving your sleep. Now, that might sound horrific because you think, well, I can't get enough sleep during the week. I need to lie in at the weekend to catch up on sleep. And yes, lying at the weekend, if you really can't get enough sleep during the week, is better than nothing, but it's far better to be consistent across the week because it's like healthy eating. There's no point eating rubbish Monday through Friday if at the weekend you're going to have some, juice smoothies and some salads. I mean, that's not the same as eating healthily all week long. And we do sleep so much better if we go to bed at a regular time, wake up at a regular time. And when someone's struggling with sleep, if it's not just your life that's stopping you from sleeping, but if it's your brain, you go to bed with every intention of falling asleep, but your brain just won't let you, or you've got a busy mind, or you just can't switch off, then that weekend lie-in actually can be perpetuating the problem. And it's a much better idea to be really consistent 7 days per week, which means setting an alarm for Saturday and Sunday, even if you don't have to get up. And your circadian rhythm, which is your internal 24-hour clock, will love you for that because our circadian rhythm, which is what gives us jet lag, it loves regularity. And just think when the clocks change, like the clocks change in March and October in the UK. How hard is that 1 hour clock change? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's 1 hour. But we all go like, oh, it's so hard to change this by 1 hour. And yet we do this to ourselves every weekend. We go to bed much, much later on Saturday and Friday night, Saturday night, sleep in Saturday night, Saturday morning, Sunday morning. And then we wonder why we can't go to sleep at the intended early time on Sunday because we've changed our circadian rhythm. So yeah, regularity, as boring as that is. I would say that writing, dedicated worry time, expressive writing, brain dump time, is it may say, sound a bit wishy-washy, but there is so much science to prove that it's incredibly effective. It really, really is. And then Making some time for relaxation during the day, some downtime. You know, how popular is mindfulness? Taking a mindful walk in nature, forest bathing. You know, there's so many aspects of popular sort of things, popularity at the moment, that are about just slowing down. Because if we do spend our lives going a million miles an hour trying to keep every single second of our day productive and useful, and then just expect that our brain can just switch off and go to sleep, we can't. Sleep isn't relaxation. People think that sleeping is the time when you get to relax. No, sleeping is a time when your body physically repairs, but relaxing is something you need to do during the day when you're awake. And if you don't, your brain is going to keep you awake in the middle of the night because it's trying to find that time. And that's the last thing we want, is to be lying there at 3, 4 in the morning, wishing we could go back to sleep again, because your brain and your body is just simply going, we need to just have some time to ourselves now. So just be intentional about it. Do something during the day that you find relaxing, and try and have a transition between your busy, busy working stress and sleep time. That's what that wind down before bed is all about. And that wind down shouldn't be scrolling through your phone. It should be something intentional and calming. Read a book, paint a picture, talk to your family, just do something to give yourselves a bit of a relaxation, which will help your brain to be in a much calmer frame of mind, so that when you lie down in bed, you fall asleep much more easily.
I love that. Lindsay, thank you so much for your time today. If anyone
Thank
wants to
you.
find out more about you, where are the best places to find you?
Brilliant. So yeah, so my book, Navigating Sleeplessness, is it went to number one in the Amazon charts last summer, which was amazing. So that was very cool. So yeah, there's loads of information. It's a self-help book, all about what sleep is, how you can improve it, lots of things that I've mentioned today, and more in detail. So yeah, that's Navigating Sleeplessness. And you can find me on the internet. On my website is troublesleeping.co.uk, and I'm on all social media at Dr. Browning Sleep. So that's Instagram, all that stuff. And you can sign up for a newsletter if you want. I send one once a month. And yeah, and please, if you have any questions or anything you want to ask me, just reach out to me. Just email me, direct message me, that kind of thing. And I'd love to help you with any sleep questions that you have.
Incredible. Lindsay, I'm going to put all of your details in the show notes, but thank you very, very much for your time today.
Thank you.
A huge thank you to Dr. Browning for bringing her expertise in the world of sleep to the podcast this week. It was wonderful to sit down with her and to pick her brain. I got to ask a few questions after the recording as well, which is always one of the best bits about hosting the platform. But it was really, really fantastic to have her. I'm going to link all of her details in the show notes below. Of course, go and check out her social media platforms as well as her book that we discussed on the recording. And Lindsay really gave me food for thought, and she really reinforced some of the work that we are doing with our client base. I actually hope a lot of my clients were listening to this episode and almost rolling their eyes of, Caroline, we're talking again about sleep consistency, and you don't need to listen to or take my word for it anymore. We have Dr. Browning's take on how important sleep consistency is. She put it number one in her non-negotiables when it came to sleep. And she tapped into something else as well that has been at the forefront of my focus, and I've been talking a lot about within our coaching community. And it's this idea of stillness, and it's this idea of creating pockets of calm within what is often a very, very busy day, a very, very hectic life. And the importance of the stillness in the day because of the ripple effect, because of the huge positive impact these pockets of calm can have on things like our decision making, on our energy, on our nutritional choices, on our exercise, on our ability to think clearly, on our sleep, as Dr. Lindsay mentioned. So this is really an idea that I'm running with at the moment. It's getting a lot of my focus and attention, both in my own life and in my coaching work. But hopefully we've planted some seeds there and made you think about your own working day and how we can bring, as I say, that stillness and calm into the day. Okay. Thank you so much for your time and attention. I know there are literally millions of podcast platforms out there, and the fact that you choose to spend your time and attention with us here, particularly if you got to this point in the recording, really does mean the absolute world. The podcast is part of our conscious effort to make health and well-being information accessible and ultimately for free. It's my view that we should be able to share all of this and use the Health Hacks platform as a platform for these incredible voices to share their message and their knowledge with anyone who wants to hear it. So, as I say, I thank you so much for your time and attention. If you would like to do so, it would mean the absolute world if you could show your support for the show. There are two ways really to do that. One is to hit the follow or subscribe button on your podcast platform of choice. You're probably listening to me on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And the second is send to someone in your inner circle. Perhaps you have met someone recently who's mentioned that they're struggling with their sleep at the moment. Maybe they've got some, you know, lots of anxieties and worries going on and their sleep is taking a hit, as we discussed in this episode with Dr. Lindsay. If that sounds like someone in your life, send this recording to them. Perhaps you have a peer or as a family member going through menopause. As we discussed, it can be a really turbulent time for sleep. Maybe this is exactly what they need to hear at this moment. So if you did feel in a position where you wanted to share the podcast, it would mean the absolute world to me. If you're interested in one-to-one coaching, if you've listened to a number of episodes by this point and you think, yeah, do you know what? I really resonate with this message and it's really time for me to start actioning some of the things that I've been hearing, get in touch. I'd love to hear from you. My contact details are in the show notes below, and I want to find out more about you, your lifestyle, but more importantly, your goals. Where do you want to be in weeks and months from now? We can have an informal conversation, find out if I might be the best fit to help you get there. Okay, have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful week, and we will catch up next time on the Health Hacks podcast.